Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome back to Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast with me, Caroline Foran. I am delighted to be joined, I would love to say in studio, but the reality is we're in my bedroom. I'm joined by Aislinn Keenan, host of Private Education Podcast, and I guess I'm going to call you like a sex and relationships expert.
Don't tell okay? my, yeah, it's fine, but don't tell my parents or my husband.
She's really good at sex.
And really good at relationships. No, I am not. What I am is the host of a sex and relationships podcast, as you said, and then also over the course of time, I used to write a sex column, and I did for years, and I've interviewed a lot of experts. So in a similar way that you like might not have the piece of paper that says, you know.
Yeah. No, I think similarly. Like we distill the experts info into something that you can actually put into action in your own life.
Exactly.
And demystify. And I also think it's really important always to like draw from your own experience. With, I think, with relationships, you kind of have to.
Yeah.
And you've had lots of experience there.
Yes, that's fair.
No,
but hasn't everyone?
Like you've been sleeping around.
No, well, I mean, listen, everyone, like, no matter what you do in your life, from the time you're a teenager until whatever age, like, all you do is have relationships.
Yeah.
Whether it's platonic relationships, whether it's
family,
sexual relationships, whatever it is. So we're constantly always navigating relationships. So yes, I have lots of experience and I've had a fair amount of sex, I'm going to say.
Well done. Go you.
Thanks.
So the reason that I asked you on this podcast was I get a lot of messages from people asking me for specific advice around anxiety in relationships. Mm-hmm. And so mostly like romantic relationships.
Yeah.
A lot of messages about trying to come back to yourself after a breakup. There's so many different like areas in a relationship, whether you're in it or not in it or waiting for it or getting over it, where anxiety can come about. And it actually, like, it's probably one of the most commonly experienced anxieties. Mm. Because like you say, we all have relationships.
Yeah.
So I wanted to be able to answer some of those questions as best we could. I mean, like we're both just kind of feeling it out and see if we can understand a little bit more about why anxiety is present in relationships and why it might rear up and whether anxiety in a relationship is an issue or par for the course.
Mm-hmm.
So from my experience, I had a lot of anxiety in previous relationships. And for me, it was very clear that they weren't the right ones. I have next to no anxiety in my relationship right now, which would make me kind of jump to the conclusion that anxiety is probably something to be a little bit concerned about in a relationship. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is something to be concerned about. But like that, you kind of have to look at yourself first, I would say, in terms of if it's anxiety you're feeling. Because if you have a generalized anxiety disorder, that might be,
absolutely,
you know, poking at that. Like there might be anxiety where none is really necessary. So if it is something that you're thinking, okay, this might be me, have a look inward, chat to a therapist, all that kind of stuff. But then also, if you're in a relationship and you're feeling a lot of anxiety where you wouldn't normally be an anxious person, mm-hmm. that is probably more of a red flag than anything, because there must be a cause for it. Either you feel like you're not in the right relationship, or the person that you're with is, you know, I don't know, gaslighting you, or, you know, causing you these issues.
I remember in like previous relationships, and I've only really had like three major relationships in my life. My mm-hmm. first boyfriend, when I was literally like a raw infant teenager.
Small child, he was grooming you.
Yeah. I think I was 14 going on 15 to 18, but they were formative years.
Very much so.
Was my first sexual experience, and it was not a good one, and it has left scars around all of that. It's a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
Then my second kind of what I thought was like the love of my life was 18 to 23 or 4. Mm-hmm. And then Barry, the current husband. but I remember feeling that all of that anxiety around not knowing if I could trust him, or being insecure and needing more and wanting more reassurance. And I remember feeling so like, it's so easy to feel in that vulnerable position that it's just you, and that you're being ridiculous, because especially if they tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've learned since, you know, being in a healthy relationship, whether or not I'm an anxious person, if I feel supported and loved and there's open communication, like I was absolutely justified in feeling how I was feeling.
Yes,
it's often a symptom of what's going on.
Yeah.
But it is hard to tease apart. Like, I guess if someone's had a bad experience with a relationship, carrying that over, it might well be a case of like, you're in this habit of thinking that someone's like less into it because someone in a previous relationship was that way.
Yeah. You've kind of nailed it there, like, as in previous relationships really do have a big role to play in dictating what happens in your next relationship and your next one after that. And I think there's kind of two things at play there. The first thing is obviously like age and maturity. So if something happens in a relationship when you're in your late teens or early 20s or even younger than that, that can really, it happens at the time where you're turning on your relationship awareness, and you're forming in your head what a romantic relationship feels like to you. So if that initial relationship is set up with someone who is very critical, or very closed off emotionally, or very if you have kind of different love languages, even, like, I'm sure you've spoken about them on the podcast before.
Have you not? No, okay, please tell. I'm so like unaware of this.
Okay, so love languages, basically, there's like five or six. I'm not an expert, but I know that one of them is, you know, good deeds. So if you're, and you can take a test actually online and find out what your love language is and what your partner's one is, because there's no point in finding out what yours is and not also checking in on your partner's.
So is this where we assume that like, the only way to show love is to be like saying I love you and being affectionate,
exactly.
And there are other modes.
Okay. And what's important to you versus what's important to your partner can mean that you come in at kind of loggerheads. So say, for instance, the top thing on my love languages is quality time.
Mm-hmm.
The top thing on one of my best friend's love languages is physical contact. So hugs, intimacy, like physical hand holding, that kind of thing. My thing is quality time. The other one is, which is obviously, you know, it is exactly what it says, spending time together, one-on-one, looking at each other, talking to each other, communicating, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Another love language is good deeds. So, you know, somebody might feel loved by their partner, you know, emptying the dishwasher without them having to ask, or mm-hmm. making the bed for them, or whatever the case might be, you know, filling their car with petrol when they didn't, you know, have to do it themselves, that type
being
of thing.
Being considerate in those little ways. Yeah,
exactly.
And so that might seem a little bit more far removed from the way we traditionally think of showing love.
Exactly. Yeah. But for some people, like, I mean, physical touch was really low down. I think my physical touch need, I suppose, was about 10% or less.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, occasionally everyone likes a hug likes to be, you know, but if we were watching television, myself and my husband watching television at the end of the day, I wouldn't be wanting to hold his hand.
No.
Or I wouldn't want him to be like cuddling me on the couch.
No, I would like to use him as a footrest.
Maybe. Yeah. Or like an active massaging footrest.
Yeah.
If that's, yeah. No, but I'm not necessarily like, let's have a hug, or let's walk down the road holding each other or anything like that. But for some people, that is a top thing.
Okay.
Likewise, good deeds for me. I mean, listen, I'm not going to object to the dishwasher being emptied, but my preference for feeling like I'm connecting with my partner is quality time.
Okay.
And thankfully, I have married someone for whom that is also their top requirement.
Amazing. Okay, so I guess then, like, in a generalized way, anxiety might rear its head in a relationship that is otherwise, you know, fine and well matched if you speak different love languages.
Totally.
And maybe starting there.
Yeah.
Or at least, okay, obviously starting with looking at your own issues
of
anxiety, your own past relationships.
Yeah.
But in a relationship that you believe is good and the right one and, you know, you want to work on it, figuring out where you both, so I'm going to put that test in the podcast notes.
That'd
be really helpful, because I definitely have friends, like one of my friends, she's so physically affectionate, and like oftentimes she, you know, over the years she would have come to me saying she was upset about, you know, him just not meeting her at that level.
Yeah.
And but then like he'll do things for her, like go and like handcraft her a card, like a Valentine's Day card made out of like wood or something. And I'm like, oh my god, like Barry would never do that. And then I'm like, I don't get anything like that.
But you see, this is the thing, it's what's important to you and what's important to your partner. So like a handcrafted card might be, you might be like, oh my god, that's amazing, but for her, she just wants a hug.
But so what happens then if you both speak different love languages? You have to reach a point of acceptance.
You have to reach a point of acceptance, but also a point of like consideration and sensitivity to your partner. Because if you both take the test and you figure out what, and look, it's one of those online tests, it's not scientifically accurate by any stretch, but it does give you a good idea of what's important to you in a relationship. And so if you both take the test and you have different love languages, communicate that. So say, well, my top thing is quality time, your top thing is good deeds. What I'll try to do for you is I'll try to do more good deeds. I'll try to, you know, put your wash on for you when you're not in the house. I'll try to, whatever the case might be, I might try and another one of them actually is gift giving. So some people really appreciate like flowers, a card, you know, a gesture like that, bringing home your favorite chocolate bar at the end of the day. That's not one of my top needs, but quality time is. So my husband might say, okay, well, this weekend, instead of me bringing her home flowers, what I might do is take that half an hour, come home early from work, and we'll spend it together with the baby, or we'll spend it together on a walk or whatever it might be. So what the love languages thing does is it gives you just an umbrella kind of guideline of what might, where you're both coming from and what is important to the other person. And I'm not saying like no one can change themselves to suit their partner's love language. You can't, you can't do that. You can't suddenly be like, oh yeah, well actually gifts would make it all better. You can't, you know, or.
But being respectful, of how you both express it.
Exactly.
I think that's.
Exactly.
I mean, certainly when I was younger, I wouldn't have had any clue about that. Mm-hmm. And you would just look to like movies and TV for what it should look like.
Which is dangerous.
Which is dangerous for everything, especially for sex. And that has been a big thing for me. And we'll get into that.
Mm.
Before I got so many questions. I asked people to send in their questions and take part in some polls. I'd love to ask you, you've experienced anxiety in relationships before. How did it show up for you? What was going on?
I think for me, the biggest, one relationship that I had was 4 years long or thereabouts. And the biggest source of anxiety for me within that was that I always felt like I wasn't wanted enough. I felt like I remember we had been together maybe 2 years and I still was like only, not allowed, allowed was the wrong word. But I remember him saying to me, okay, well, Saturdays and Wednesdays, like you come over on a Saturday, we spend the day together, you spend the night, and then Wednesday evenings after we both finish work is our night. And I was like, yeah, fine. And naively, I was like, yeah, fine. And then like, I found myself, I'd text him on like a Friday night or something, and I'd be like, what are you up to? And he'd be like, oh, nothing, just chilling at home. And I'd be like, me too. And then it'd be tumbleweed. And I'd be like, why wouldn't you want me? Like, why would you not want to fill that day with, or fill that time with me, like, and it made me over. So at the start I was like, yeah, fine, we're just, you know, it's early days, grand. But deep into the relationship, I remember being like, this is not right. And I remember saying it to my friends and they were like, that's bizarre, like why wouldn't your partner after that length of time want to see you that bit of, you know, for a couple of extra hours? And I just always felt like I was being kind of put in a box, and that was where I slotted into his life. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't escape out of that box and just be spontaneous and do things, whatever. It was bizarre. Yeah. And that obviously caused me great anxiety. And there was a whole, like, the, obviously with any relationship there's layers to these things. There was obviously like I can look back and see retrospectively what was going on there and what was wrong. But I just never felt wanted enough, and that caused me anxiety.
And then how did that influence your behavior then, or your feelings, or your, did that change how you've felt about yourself?
Yeah, it definitely influenced my behavior, first of all, because I turned into someone that I don't think I actually am, in the sense that I became very needy and very, you know, like I kind of turned into someone I wasn't familiar with. And that caused me anxiety because I was like,
who am I?
Like,
well, that really bugs me because I remember feeling like the exact same in my second biggest relationship, where I just like, he was like horizontal and I was, you know, planning everything. And I was like, and I came across so needy and wanting so much more. And like, and I don't with Barry at all because he meets me halfway. I'm not trying to overcompensate. And I felt like that was, oh, I'm just needy. And like, obviously the word needy has such negative connotations. Yeah. Like, oh God, how dare you have needs in a relationship?
Yeah, yeah,
and, you know, want there to be more than just like a ride, an actual like emotional connection. Yeah. And I really do believe that when people feel that insecure and needy in a relationship, for the most part, there's reason for it.
100%. Yeah, 100%.
I think someone is making you feel that way. And then if you feel like it's your fault, then that creates anxiety that's doesn't even, it's not warranted, because it's like, it's gaslighting, really.
It
even
is.
If the person is so unaware of it and just like, God, like you're so needy. Mm. It's horrible. So how, like, how did you feel? How did you get out of that feeling? And how does it differ to now you're, you know, in a much better
position? Yeah, well, the only way I got out of the feeling, and like there was a lot going on there, which is why we're no longer together. But, you know, and it wasn't just that. There was so much at play, and there was so much actually going on in the background that I wasn't really aware of even, which is bad, because you probably should know most things about your long-term partner. But obviously there was a lot there. So I got out of the relationship. I didn't fix it within that relationship. I just had to get out of it. And then,
was the anxiety of knowing you should get out of it worse than getting out of it?
Probably for a time, yeah. And I definitely put off getting out of it. Like, as in, I knew, I'm going to say at least 6 months before we broke up, that we were breaking up.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds awful. And
I think I was about a year.
Yeah. Like, I should have done it earlier. But it was hard to do. I didn't want to hurt him. It was upheaval, and for me it was upheaval, for him it was upheaval. I just didn't want to, and you do have that guilt of, you know, hurting someone or whatever, but it was my decision at the end, when it did end. But having said that, like, I have been dumped in the past, so I know that's not what that was. It was my call, let's say.
Yeah.
But
you spearheaded it.
I did. I led the campaign, but I knew he supported it.
Yeah, that's exactly the same as me. I knew that. Like, I know you're going to make me be the one to do this, but it's because you've actually checked out.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, it actually wasn't that he made me do it. You know, it wasn't one of those occasions where he pushed me so far and then I just had to, you know, call it. It kind of wasn't like that. But I knew when I literally sat down with him on the bed and I went, we need to talk. And I knew the minute I said that sentence, he knew exactly what was happening, and I knew he supported it. I knew he was going to be like, I agree.
Okay.
Which actually, the minute that happened, I could feel such a weight lifted off my shoulder. I straight away felt less anxious. And thankfully, obviously now in my relationship with my husband, I don't feel like, just like you, I don't feel like, of course you have fights, you have arguments, you do have underlying things, but like, I don't feel a general floating dread about the relationship, which is, you know, why I'm still in it.
How can someone go about knowing the difference between an issue that they have internally with themselves? Like, for example, if you had really poor body image, or you just didn't feel confident in yourself, that could transfer onto you thinking that they're maybe not into you when they're not the one saying that or showing that, versus it being a symptom of the relationship actually not working. Like, where can someone start with that?
Well, that's funny you should say that, because the whole like body image thing came up for me in that previous relationship. And it was as a result of that person that I was with not being very sexually motivated. They didn't, we didn't meet on the same level in terms of libido. So he just didn't want to have sex as much as I did. Not that I was knocking on his door 50 times a week or anything, but we just didn't match. And that, for me, I did feel anxiety about that, because I was like, God, maybe he doesn't fancy me, maybe my body, maybe, you know. And you do kind of start thinking about that. But the only way really to delineate between, is this my anxiety or is this anxiety being, you know, brought upon me by the person I'm in a relationship with, is to talk it out. And I would recommend a therapy or speaking to your friends, because while friends, yes, they are biased in your favor, they probably will have opinions about whether your partner is gaslighting you or if your
and
partner
have seen
is,
it, I suppose.
And they'll have seen things and they'll have heard things. And that, you know, speak to your most honest friend. I like to think I'm pretty honest with my friends, and I would always be like, no, you're the one here. This is your anxiety. This is something that's in your head. They're not causing this. That's not, you know, and I will try and help them find out whether actually, no, it's their partner that's contributing to this body image anxiety or this, you know, what this trust anxiety or this communication anxiety or whatever way it's manifesting for their relationship. But the only way to really figure it out, if you don't already have an awareness that you've got an anxiety disorder of some sort, the only way to figure that out is through therapy, through talking about it and being really, really honest. I think it's important to say about you, how you behave in your relationship, how your partner behaves, and to look at it in the most, I suppose, fair way possible. Like, try not to place blame, try not to use blaming language, because as much as your partner might be to blame for some stuff, it's better to come at it from almost like looking at yourself in, you know, as a narrator of your story and going, well, this is what happened in this situation. Be really honest, whether it's with a friend or a therapist. And then from that, it will quickly become clear if the anxiety is something that you're, you know, is stemming from you and maybe being exacerbated, or if it's stemming from them and it's causing you more anxiety.
I think even within that, there could be a lot of anxiety for someone who maybe deep down knows there's an issue, but just bringing it up means what kind of can of worms are you going to open? Where, like, I remember being like, oh, you would want to pretend like there wasn't an issue, because if you did say it, it might come to a breakup, and you're so frightened of that happening. So fucking lawnmower. There is really, like, there can be anxiety at every turn.
Yeah.
Should we go through some of the questions and polls that I got?
Yeah. I'll just put away my lawnmower.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have brought it to the recording.
It's very hard to ask questions about this because there's just so many millions of stories. But I asked people, like, if you've experienced anxiety in your relationship, which have you experienced, if at all? I could only give four options. So I asked people, the fourth option was to DM me if you had a story.
Okay.
42% anxiety knowing you're not in the right relationship. 21% anxiety after a breakup. 35% feeling that you're more into it than they are.
Okay.
So they seem to be really significant drivers of it.
Yes.
Was getting over a breakup easier or harder than you expected it to be? 67% harder. I wonder, I should have clarified, was that, like, were you the instigator or was it happening to you? Because I imagine if you're the one, well, I say that, but, like, I was the one who kind of brought it to a head in my last relationship, but I still felt massive anxiety afterwards because I was with him for so long.
Yeah.
I didn't know what life looked like without him. I was so frightened about the future and, you know, it was so scary. But I guess if it comes at you like a bat out of hell, it must be so unnerving.
Yeah. But I think it actually would be very rare for a breakup to completely come out of the blue. If you're not, like, completely not in your right frame of mind, because I think in relationships generally, whether we talk about it or whether we want to admit it or not, we kind of do have an idea of what's going on, and we kind of have an idea of if we're happy, if our partner is happy. And so I think for any, no matter what the breakup is, whether you have instigated it or whether they have, the level of anxiety is probably going to be pretty similar, I would imagine, because you're making a major life change, you're making a major life decision. Whether it's your choice or it isn't, it's still going to bring about anxiety.
Have you ever felt anxious in a relationship? 90% yes. Mm. So only 10% of people were like, no, never. Okay, so some of the, let's go through some of the kind of questions and stories.
Okay.
Long-term loving relationship, but always assume any unhappiness on my partner's behalf is because of me.
Yeah, that's a really common one. And I have to say, and I'll be completely honest, I feel that too. I think it's probably some level of codependency, but I do take on a lot of responsibility for other people's happiness. That's one of the things that I am currently working through, but I think it will be a lifelong thing. But it's super common. So the first thing I would say to the person who asked that question is to don't think you're alone in that. Like, it's incredibly common for codependency to happen in relationships and for you to feel each other's feelings and let each other's mood determine your mood. Like, I have definitely experienced in the past, if someone that I'm with was in bad form, whether it was to do with me or it wasn't, I would take that on. Not only would I be in worse form, bad form, but I would be racking my brain trying to think, what did I do? How did I make this anger happen or make this resentment happen or make this sadness happen or whatever it was? 9 times out of 10, it was nothing to do with me, but I would still take it on. And what the advice I kind of got and had to give myself in that instance was, kind of pause yourself before you let that person's feelings in. Pause yourself and say to them, okay, ask them, are they okay? So check in, say, are you okay? Is there anything you need to talk to me about? They're going to say no, more than likely. They're going to, you know, shut that down because they might not want to talk about it or whatever. If they want to talk about it, great. And you can find out, is it something you did or is it not? Once you find out it's not, you can relax a bit. You can work on leaving it. And if you find out, if they say no, what you can do then is you can say, okay, look, I'm not going to ask you again if you're okay, but if you need to come to me with anything, I'm here. I'm happy to chat to you. I'm, you know, open to sitting
down.
And
would you voice that you're afraid that it's to do with you?
I think so, yeah. I think maybe not every time, but I definitely would say to kind of in a general, if you wanted to have a chat with your partner, maybe not at the time of the heightened anxiety or maybe not at the time where you're having this initial kind of, are you okay? Check in. But at a time where you're just having a general chat about how your relationship is going, which I advise, by the way, constantly communicating is good. Have a chat with them and be like, look, sometimes, you know, when I'm asking if you're okay and your mood is low or your mood is kind of whatever it is, and I take that on a lot. Like, so bear that in mind and ask them to just bear in mind when you ask them, is everything okay? And they don't talk or don't want to talk about it or can't communicate at that particular time. Say, just look, that actually sticks with me and that kind of affects my mood and it affects me and I take that on a lot. So bear that in mind. And even having that conversation and making your partner aware that you've taken on their mood and that how they act around you determines how you feel to a certain extent changes everything, really. Mm-hmm. Because that you having communicated that, first of all, takes a bit of the weight off.
Yeah, and just addressing it is always like the first step to just vocalizing some of the anxiety. Yeah,
totally. And then secondly, it will make them think twice before they turn their mood into your mood.
Yeah,
you know, and it's not, they're not doing it intentionally. Obviously that's on you. If you're taking on someone else's mood, it is mostly on you, but it might make them aware of, okay, well, how can I, you know, even say if they're, say they hate their job and they're coming home every day from work and they're in bad form. If you communicate to them that, you know, that's affecting you and it's affecting your life as a family or whatever it is, it's affecting the atmosphere in the house. What they might do then is they go, okay, well, I don't want to go home in bad form. What I'm going to do is on the way home from work, I'm going to go to the park, have a 15-minute walk around, try and get back to, you know, the status quo mood-wise and then come home.
Yeah.
Or whatever it takes for them to... but even, like I said, even the awareness, even an awareness that is affecting you will help.
Yeah.
Because it'll be in the back of their mind and they might be a bit more forgiving or they might be a bit more likely to try and regulate their own mood.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Something that I remember this so well when I see this message. Wondering, will it get better and will his behavior change? Because I remember so many situations where it was like his behavior was creating, because I knew full well it was his behavior and not me, mm-hmm. creating this anxiety in me. Like I was really miserable, and you just, and like when you have a chat about it and they're like, oh, like I'm going to change and, you know, I'm going to be better and like, I'm sorry about that thing. And then you're just like, it's fine for a while. And then the next, it happens again.
Yeah. Or,
and then it's just like, after a while, you're like, it's actually never going to change. And you have this sinking feeling. Like, you can't change someone.
No, you can't. And I think that's a mistake. I mean, it's a mistake that a lot of people make getting into relationships. And I say people, it's not just women, because that's the stereotype. We want to fix a man or whatever in a heterosexual relationship. That's not the case at all. Both sides of a relationship can get into one thinking that they're going to change or fix or solve some kind of issue with their partner, and all of a sudden everything will be better. It doesn't often happen. Now, that's not to say it doesn't happen, because definitely people can change. For instance, time can change people. So if you're with someone when you're 20 and you're still with them when you're 30, you're going to be inevitably completely different people. Mm-hmm. And that one side of that relationship could have evolved into someone who's more mature, who sees things differently, who has actually changed how they behave. Another thing that can change someone is going to therapy. You know, speaking to someone professionally about your issues or about your childhood or about anything, previous relationships, whatever it might be, can actually have a very fundamental impact on how someone behaves within relationships. It's highly unlikely that you are going to be able to change someone. So the passage of time, yes. Professional help, yes. You just being a wonderful person, no. And the thing that will happen there is you'll be going, well, I can't change this person. And you'll be changing yourself to make them feel better. So you'll be going, well, what if I was, you know, I don't know, more beautiful? Maybe if I did this to my hair. What if I was funnier? What if I worked harder? What if I kept the house cleaner? What if I did, you know? And you'll be going through, you'll be picking yourself apart almost in an effort to help them love you more, mm-hmm. or whatever. And that's just a road to nowhere, because the person that you're with needs to, like you said, meet you halfway and love you for exactly who you are at all times, good, bad and ugly. Like, and I think thinking that behavior will change without some kind of very real intervention or without the passage of time and you just change as it happens as we age is kind of unrealistic. Again, that's not to say in some situations, if you were to have, I think change can happen when someone genuinely isn't aware that a behavior is affecting their partner. And if a conversation is had where they're like, oh my God, I actually wasn't aware of that. Let me look at that. And if you have that conversation and change happens, fantastic. Mm-hmm. However, if you have that conversation, or if you have a genuine, real, very serious discussion and be like, look, this behavior affects me in this way, and you give it time and it doesn't change, or it changes and then goes back to normal, it's unlikely to be a lasting change. Mm-hmm. So that's something to bear in mind. And that's really hard. That's a hard pill to swallow for anybody.
Yeah, really hard.
Because you could be in a relationship that otherwise is, you know, makes you happy, or otherwise is quite fulfilling or whatever. But if there's one sticking point that constantly comes up and you've had a conversation about it and over the course of time it hasn't made a difference, that behavior will keep cropping up and it will keep being an issue for you. So you have to make the call there. Is that something I'm willing to live with or is it not?
Okay.
And that's really hard.
This is a really important one. And I think this is an anxiety that can be experienced on both sides of the relationship. How to learn to trust again when you've been cheated on in every relationship. And when I say both sides, I mean anxiety, obviously, on the person who's been cheated on that it will happen again, but also a lot of pressure on the person they're with to constantly reassure them that they won't.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine would just feel like a lot.
It is a lot, and it's a huge, huge thing. And infidelity happens in more relationships than you might think, and it's so common. I don't say that to like scare people or make people think, you know, it's going to happen to me or anything, but I say it to make people know
they're
that they're not alone, and it does happen a lot. And for lots of different reasons as well. And like, as we move through life and relationships, the reason that people, you know, cheat change. And the reason for someone cheating is key to whether trust can be rebuilt.
Okay.
So trust definitely can be rebuilt. Again, things like, it's all very similar, but things like the passage of time, but also going to therapy. So if you go to couples therapy after infidelity, things can be repaired. And even if you don't, things can be repaired. You can learn to trust again. But the anxiety that comes with, you know, when you're in the process of rebuilding trust, when someone has cheated on you or when you've cheated on someone, you're totally right in what you said, that you'll have your own, if you're the person who's been cheated on, say, you will have your own anxieties around, how can I ever trust them? You'll want to check their phone. You will take on.
Is this with the person who cheated on you, or is this in a new relationship where you're just carrying it over?
Either or. Because you're the same level of inability to trust will exist within you, whether mm-hmm. you're still with the person that cheated on you or whether you're with a new person. And that can actually be quite difficult for a new relationship, for a partner in a new relationship, because they've never done anything. And
if you're staying in the existing relationship, mm-hmm. like say you believe that they can, you know, reform themselves and there's trust there, mm-hmm. then you bring in this external anxiety of everyone thinks you're a fool for staying with them, or the judgment, you know, of like, I we all know someone who's experienced that where it's like, oh, like, how could she go back to him or how could he go back to her?
Yeah. And this is the thing. I mean, the judgment thing really actually annoys me, because no one else is in a position to judge you or your relationship. No one actually knows what's going on. No, like literally nobody, no friend, no family member, no one who even lives in your house can know what goes on in a relationship apart from you and your partner. And that thing of judgment from friends and family, no one understands. So you can kind of, in a way, put that out of your mind. It's easier said than done, obviously, but you can put that out of your mind, because the only person's happiness that you need to worry about is your own. And I even mean that, like, you don't even need to worry about your partner's happiness. The only person that you're in charge of, the only person whose feelings you can control are your own. And so if that means, you know, if friends and family are judging you for getting back with someone who's cheated on you, they're not in the same position. They don't know, they don't understand. So you don't have to worry about them. But at the same time, there is no shame or judgment that should come for someone who stays in a relationship. There are so many reasons to stay in a relationship after infidelity, whether that's, you know, something like financial reasons, whether it's children, whether it's, you know, time spent, whether you could have been with someone for so long.
So many reasons to get out of a relationship that don't include infidelity.
Yeah, absolutely.
That we just think that that is the kind of bottom line, deal breaker.
Yeah.
But someone could be treating you really terribly and not having cheated.
Absolutely.
And actually, you know, you shouldn't be in that.
Yeah.
You know, so
of course.
It goes both ways.
Yeah.
This came up again and again. Mm. And this is more to do with people who struggle with anxiety. And I remember this with getting with Barry. I was kind of okay at the time. But then very quickly after we moved in together, I experienced the anxiety that led me to all of this. And I was like, oh my God, he did not sign up for this. Now, I had no choice but for him to see all of it, because I was living with him.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people feel like the anxiety comes from how to broach it with a partner, because you don't want to scare them off.
Mm-hmm.
But you also live with these things, whatever kind of mental health challenges that you experience. It's almost like a fear of letting them see the real you. But I feel that if you were to hide it from a potential romantic long-term partner, that's creating an anxiety that you don't need, because you're trying to live up to this thing that's, you're creating a version of you that's not who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not giving the benefit of the doubt to the person that you're with to actually meet you at your level and be like, it's okay, and normalize it.
Yeah.
You're almost stigmatizing yourself mm-hmm. in the relationship by not vocalizing it. Yeah. But I also understand that it can be really scary to be like, you know, when do you bring that up? How do you bring up the serious heavy shit? At what point? So that it's like they can opt out if they want to, but you don't want to go there on like a fun, lighthearted date. It's really tricky.
Yeah, I think the issue of bringing or introducing anxiety into a new relationship, if it's something that you struggle with, is very difficult to know. It's very difficult to know when to do it.
Yeah.
But it's very important that you do. And I actually do think it's important that you do it early. And think of it this way. So many people suffer in so many ways with issues, right? Whether it's anxiety, whether it's OCD, whether it's, you know, some kind of health concern, like a physical health concern, whether it's a family issue that they're having, whether it's, you know, an ex that they're having trouble with, whether it's, you know, they have children and they're trying, you know, there are so many reasons why people, like, everyone's going through something. Do you yeah. know what I mean? So when you're meeting someone and you're dating them, and you say, well, look, I actually really struggle with anxiety. I always have. Or whether it's, you know, I'm actually, I don't know, diabetic and I have to take insulin this many times a day and I wear a pump. Or
yeah.
whether it's I had, you know, Crohn's disease as a child and now I wear a stoma bag or whatever yeah. the thing is. Look, whatever your thing is, you have to, it's part of you. And you're right, stigmatizing yourself. Plenty of people are going to stigmatize you. Stigmatizing yourself is not where you want to start a new relationship. And so I genuinely would, you know, urge anyone who has any kind of anxiety issue, bring it to the person that you're dating early doors yeah. as if it's nothing, right?
Because it doesn't have to be a big thing. Like if I achieve my goal of getting it normalized, it's the same way you're like, oh yeah, I'm into Man United. Oh yeah, like I struggle with anxiety sometimes.
Yeah. yeah. And listen, if the person that you're across the table from is like, holy shit, and packs up their bags and legs it out the door, that person wasn't for you anyway.
No, you don't.
You're yeah. not missing anything there. And yes, you might have liked them. And yes, you might have thought it was going to go somewhere, whatever. That's fine. Like, realistically, what would have happened there is you would have gotten into the relationship, showed them who you really are further down the line. And at that point, the whole thing would have blown up. So in a way, the earlier you bring it in, the more you're protecting yourself from potential future difficulty. And the earlier you announce something like that, it doesn't even have to be an announcement, but the earlier you tell someone that, you know, well, actually I have OCD, or actually I suffer with anxiety, or actually I do this, or whatever the case might be, the earlier you do that, the yes, granted, they have a chance to run in the opposite direction if they want, but it's also a chance for, first of all, for them to say, well, oh my God, me too.
Yeah.
Or a chance for them to go, okay, well, this is part of who she is. And over the course of time, obviously, you don't want to be like, and this is what happens when I have a panic attack. And this is how many times a year that happens to me. And when we do that, this is the medication I take. And this yeah. is the doctor I go to. Like, you don't have to bring that level of detail.
Yeah.
But you can bring it up in a conversation and be like, well, this is actually how I feel. And this is what I struggle with sometimes. And I'm sure 9 times out of 10, you're going to be met with understanding, compassion and empathy.
And if you're not,
then there's your answer.
Your call to action.
Exactly.
In the dating world, them not replying for days and then acting completely normal.
Ugh, the dating world.
We're so far beyond that.
I am beyond the dating world, but I also hear this so much. And I just, like, there's nothing that annoys me more.
Are there rules that people are playing by when they're dating now? Like, this is always a trope in movies. Like, oh, you don't leave it for 48 hours. Like, I just can't.
There are, but there shouldn't be. Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, dating is not some kind of tournament that people enter. And granted, the internet hasn't helped with that, because it has kind of, things like Tinder and Bumble and whatever have kind of gamified dating. They've turned dating into this thing to be completed and to be achieved and to tick boxes and to get the numbers up and to whatever. And whatever way you use dating apps or whatever way you're on the scene in dating, if something feels like a game, don't play it. Like, yeah. just remove yourself from that narrative. And if someone else is, if you're sitting there thinking, okay, I had a really good time on that date, but no, I'm going to wait for 2 days to text them because I don't want to seem too eager. That's nonsense. If you are the type of person that wants to send a text immediately after date is finished, and that is what you want to do, and that's what feels good, you do that. And if you are the type of person that might forget about it for a couple of days and then text them, do that also.
Do you think more often than not, though, like if you don't, like I feel like if I was dating and if I went out and I thought we had a great time, if I didn't hear from them for like 3 or 4 days, I'd be like, they're obviously not into it.
Yeah, that's absolutely valid. And I would probably think the same thing. And
or are they just dumb? Like, well, they don't like.
I don't think it can be put down to just bare ignorance. But what I would say is not everyone has the same communication style as you, right? So, but again, like the communication style will become quickly apparent. So say, for instance, you're texting someone flat out, right?
Yeah.
And you go, so you're texting all day long, all day long, all day long. Then you go on a date. And this is natural at the start of a relationship. Your communication is higher and you're in contact more. Like I think I text my husband about once a week now, even though we're married. Do you know what I mean? But at the start of a relationship, you're in contact a lot. If then you have a couple of dates and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the communication either stops or becomes very, you know, like that 3 or 4 days in between a message. It's at that point you can go, well, hang on a second. What happened? What changed there? Like, why all of a sudden, after a few dates, did you leave a 3-day gap? What has happened? And it's okay for you to ask that. It's okay for you to be like, I didn't hear from you for a few days. Is everything okay? Now, if the communication has always been that way, if it's always been, well, I didn't hear from him for 3 days, but then we had a lovely date. Didn't hear from him for another 3 days, then we had another lovely date.
But what if it always makes you feel like crap?
Yeah. If it always makes you feel like crap, that might be something that, you know, I don't want to put it back on the person that's experiencing it, but it might be something that you have to look at. Because if there's a massive change in the communication, like I said, if it went from loads and loads and loads to very little, that will obviously cause you anxiety. And that probably is something to be like, to look at. That's probably it. You're not, you know, you're not being mad there. You're kind of going, yeah, actually, we were in communication a lot and now we're not anymore. Why has that happened? But if it is just the person's communication style, that just might be the way they communicate or the way they don't.
Yeah.
For, you know.
And have things changed like in the hetero dating world?
Yeah.
Where, you know, I often remember my friends being like, oh, like he hasn't texted me. It's like, why don't you text him? Like, do we still feel that it has to come from the male counterpart in hetero situations?
I think we might feel that way.
Because I feel I would just send a text. I'd just be like, yeah, I want to hear from you. But I don't know whether that just comes from now being in a position of feeling very secure.
Yeah. You know? And you see, this is the thing. We are in our 30s. We do have a level of maturity. We do have a level of security and comfort and, you know, confidence as well as individuals, but also in our relationships. So it's very, very easy for us to be like, I'd just send a text and I'd just do this. Of course we would.
Yeah.
We feel safe. We feel comfortable. We feel confident and mature. And we've had relationships. We've had experience. Not everyone feels those things. Not everyone feels that level of confidence to just be like, yeah, of course, I'll just send a text. Mm-hmm. So it can make you feel like crap when someone just drops off the face of the planet. I do not think, though, that there should be rules. I don't think in hetero relationships, we should wait for the man to text first. That is so just old fashioned and passe, and it shouldn't be the case. Nor should it be, nor should it be the expectation. Like, I don't think a woman getting in touch with a man and being like, hey, I had a great time last night. Do you want to do it again? I don't think that should be viewed as eager or needy.
Yeah.
Those tropes need to die,
they
frankly.
They need to die. They really do.
Because you expressing to another person who is your equal that you've had a fantastic time and would like to see them again, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, ringing someone's phone 29 times after midnight is probably a little eager. And that's fine to say. But dropping someone a text and, you know, expecting a follow-up, that's not wrong. So if you are going through something like that and someone's communication has changed or has dropped off or whatever it is, you're not wrong to feel anxious about it. And you are also not wrong to follow up and see what the hell has happened.
Yeah. Oh, there are so many more questions I want to get to. I think I have time for maybe one or two more. Okay. This is a big one. So say you're in a relationship and it's going really well, and then you start to struggle because you compare yourself to other couples and you're thinking, oh, they're way more affectionate than we are. Like, I mean, me and Barry would go to an event now and we wouldn't see each other from one end of the night to the next because we're just like, we're past that point of spending time together like that, you know, because when we go out, we're like, yay, other people. And I remember I used to be like, because you need to come over and like give me kisses and show me affection. It's like, oh, Caroline, like relax. Like he doesn't just to appear to be.
Yeah.
Well, you know, look, that's a big thing.
It is. And it's a really easy one to answer. First of all, appearances mean nothing, like absolutely nothing. So if you are conscious that, oh, well, my partner hasn't come near me for the night, like that's neither here nor there. If it's something that you wouldn't normally do, it like in your regular everyday life, Why should it all of a sudden start to happen when you're out and about in front of other people? And the reason that question is simple to answer is because literally when it comes to relationships, no one else except you two matter. So if you guys are happy, if you day to day are happy with the amount of, you know, physical contact, if you're happy with the amount of time you spend together, if you get along really well, if whatever the case might be, if you feel content and you know for a certain amount of certainty that your partner feels content, nothing else, no one else's relationship matters, because every single relationship is so different. There are couples out there who might not speak to each other from one end of the week to the next, but are the happiest people on the planet. There are couples out there who are constantly phoning each other and talking, and then when they get home they talk more, and they might be the happiest people on the planet. There might be people who have sex 5 times a week who are delighted, 5 times a year also delighted. Mm-hmm. There is no
template, or
there's no template for a happy relationship. And likewise, what we see at an event or on Instagram or at a family gathering or in a film or a TV show, none of those things are representative of who's happy, how happy they are, and what happens behind closed doors. You can never, ever, ever know what's going on in someone else's relationship in actuality unless you are in it. So the only way, the only thing that matters is how you both feel and how you interact with each other. And outside of that, literally nothing else matters.
Okay. Wondering how much arguing is, you know, too much, or where the norm is there. Again, we're looking for norms all the time.
Yeah, constantly, yeah.
I've often felt, because like Barry and I, we really honestly don't argue at all, to the point that I remember hearing all these things like, oh, arguing is passion and it means you're fiery. And I'm like, oh shit, we don't do that. And I remember I used to kind of walk into the flames of arguments when I was younger, because you kind of thrived on it, and it would get a reaction, and maybe you would make up and then have this whole like increased affection and love. So I think the arguments, I needed them as some sort of sign of like it being something we're both fighting for. And now it's like, it's so different, and I just don't want to spend my time arguing with him. Like we bicker, we get annoyed at each other. Like, of course that happens. But we do not like storm off from each other and not speak. And even though that's what you think you'd want, sometimes I have been anxious about it. Because I think people who argue a lot then will be quick to say, you should be arguing, it's normal, and it's, you know, you should, you know. I don't know.
I think when other people say, or say when, like, I don't know, you hear a professional or an expert or whatever say fighting is normal, you know, everyone should be able to have arguments. It's in a way, it's to make it okay that yes, you will have arguments, and having a fight and fighting with your partner is normal, and there's no relationship that doesn't experience that. That's a way of indicating to the general public that there's no relationship that doesn't go through ups and downs, and there's no relationship that doesn't have conflict. The thing to remember though is what way you both respond to conflict. Some people respond very quietly. So yourself and Barry obviously don't have standing up screaming matches in the kitchen that your neighbors can hear. My husband and I don't either. However, there are couples that interact that way. Mm-hmm. There are couples that raise their voice to each other. There are couples that will slam a door or storm out, or,
and I did all of that with my family.
Totally. Like, and that might be, you see, this is why it's so unique to a couple, because like that, you've done that in the past with family. I've done things like that with friends. I've had stand up rows with friends, whatever. Like, your communication style within your romantic relationship is unique in your life. You don't have that exact same communication style with everyone else in your life. So you have to take it as kind of an island in a sense, but then also bear in mind that not every couple's communication style is the same. So for some people, having that big screaming match and having that really passionate, fiery thing is a way of communicating. It's not right, it's not wrong, it's just their way. Mm-hmm. Likewise, you having a quiet sit down discussion about something at the end of the week. Like my husband and I, we make lists. So during the week, if something pisses me off about him, I'll write it down, not physically, but on my phone, normally in my notes app, and he'll do the same. And then on a Sunday or whatever, we'll sit down and go, right, what's on your list? And if there was a couple of things during the week, you know the way they say pick your battles?
Yeah.
So we write down our battles and we have them all together in a go. And that's how we argue. That's how we work through. We don't stop in the middle of our day and go, well, why the fuck did you not do X, Y, Z? Like, blah, and have a go at each other in that way. We wait We take a breath. We come back to it at a later time. That actually helps in more ways
than one.
That's
very mature, yeah. But I'm way more impulsive.
but that's our style. Because yeah. I wouldn't be particularly impulsive. And I don't think he would either. We're both quite laid back when it comes to stuff like that. But then we are different from the people who live next door to us. Mm-hmm. We're different from you and Mary. We're different from, like, every relationship is completely different. So there is no how many times you should argue or should you be arguing. If you're not arguing, great. There's obviously nothing wrong. If you are arguing quietly, also great. You know, you're expressing how you feel. You're getting things off your chest. There's no cookie cutter way to argue. Likewise, there's no cookie cutter number of arguments you should be having for it to be a healthy or unhealthy relationship. And yes, arguments happen, but it doesn't mean that they have to be happening.
Okay.
It means that when they happen, that's okay. You know, for so when someone says it's okay to fight in relationships, that's just an indicator to be like, look, fights will happen. It doesn't necessarily mean that they have to happen.
Okay.
So if you're not arguing with your partner and you still feel happy and you think to your best estimation that they're also happy, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Don't overthink it.
Yeah.
And an argument will happen one of these days and you'll be like, fuck, why did I wish for this?
Okay, last question I got. It wasn't so much a question and I feel like this one would be quite hard to answer. Mm-hmm. Someone messaged me and said, I'm in my mid to late 30s and all of my friends have settled down and they're married and having babies. Mm-hmm. And I've had, you know, one relationship after another that didn't work out and I'm really afraid that I won't meet someone.
The best thing to do there is to acknowledge that you may not meet someone.
Mm.
And that is hard and that is something that's terrifying. And again, coming from someone who's in a relationship, it sounds very patronizing. I'm aware of that. But if you, and this again is such a cliche, but if you are constantly on the lookout for someone, if you're waiting to complete your life with a partner, if you're waiting for this other half that people talk about, you're not going to be fulfilled. You're always going to be trying to fill that gap. And I'm not saying go and, you know, take up hobbies or, you know, I'm not saying that. That's not what I'm getting at here. But what I'm saying is being in a relationship is lovely and it's great and it's supplementary to your hopefully already very full life. It's not essential. I think you and I, Caroline, would both be fine without our husbands.
Yes, I really feel like I would be.
You would be. And so would I.
And I didn't feel like that in past relationships.
No.
Yeah.
And like, look, there are people who feel like, God, if I didn't have my husband, I wouldn't be okay. And that's also fine. Or if I didn't have my boyfriend, I wouldn't be fine. That is okay to feel that way. But please know that having a partner, a romantic partner, doesn't define you and isn't the meaning of your life. The meaning of life is, you know, family, love, children. And none of those things are off the table just because you don't have a romantic partner.
Yeah.
None of those things are off the table.
And part of that, again, is going back into the cycle of comparison where, and these like measures of success that we have been brought up to believe that, like, getting a house, having a kid, getting married, like that those are the things that you've achieved. And if you haven't, you're some sort of failing.
Totally.
And it'd be very hard not to feel like left behind when all your friends are ticking those boxes and you haven't.
But here's the thing, right? Like, all your friends that are in relationships and say have families or have children or whatever the case might be, they're probably looking at you in the same way going, God, do you remember when I was single and I could just take off and do what I wanted? And do you remember before we had kids when we could sleep in every goddamn day of the week and, you know, do whatever we wanted with our time? Everyone, you know, it is kind of grass is always greener, but at the same time, you know, your life can be full and happy. The key to happiness is not found within a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And the key to happiness is not found, you know, having happiness isn't something that you go, okay, la da da da, I've gone through my life, I've got a boyfriend, got married, got a child, got a house, tick, I'm happy now. That is not how it happens. It's not linear. Happiness is something, or even contentment, if you don't want to say happiness,
yeah.
It's something that's, it's a journey and it's something that you're going through on an ongoing basis and trying to, I don't want to say achieve, but it's just a state of being. And if you're not in a relationship now and you're worried that you might never be, it might not happen, but also it might. And you fill in your life with everything else, making yourself find that contentment in your job, whether it's travel, whether it's your family, whether it's nieces and nephews, whether it's trying to have a child solo, whatever that might be, whatever that looks like for you. is far more important than putting on, you know, blinkers and only focusing on a relationship, or like, this relationship will be the key that unlocks my contentment, because I can promise you it absolutely won't be. And I can also promise you that there is so much more to life than simply being in a relationship.
Really, really brilliant advice, Aisling. Will you come back and do an episode with me on friendship anxiety?
Yes.
Because I feel like that is such a big one.
Oh my God, we have so much to talk about.
So much to talk about. But it is, I mean, that's a whole other conversation.
It's a huge thing, yeah.
And it is definitely like a more kind of subtle anxiety that we feel like it's kind of, it's more cut and dry in a romantic relationship, I feel, than it is in friendships.
And I think often you find more willing to talk about relationship anxiety with your friends. But who do you go to talk about your anxiety that you're experiencing within your friendships?
It's really tough, you know? Well, you can listen to our podcast. Where can people find you?
They can find me. I'm always on the internet. at Aisling M. Keenan on all the platforms. And the podcast is Private Education. And that's at Private Education Podcast on Instagram as well. And there's 76 episodes up if you want to go back through and listen.
Are you ready for an influx of DMs asking you to sell people?
Oh, I'm flat out in the DMs. I am flat out. And that's why, like, but this, I love them because it gives me fuel for the podcast.
Yeah.
Like, I had a DM last week asking about vaginismus, which is the physical inability to have penetrative sex. And so I went, oh my God, this is an issue for people. And so I went and got an expert and I did an episode on it. So DM me, because it just gives me fuel for the pod.
Amazing. It's so important to be having these conversations. We can't have enough of them. And, you know, whether it's something like specific like that or relationship anxiety, everyone experiences relationships. Everyone experiences that side of life. And we need to talk about the bits that are hard to talk about and normalize them. So thank you so much for coming back to me. And I hope you'll come back again soon.
I absolutely will. Thanks so much, Caroline.
Thank you for listening. I hope you found this episode helpful. As always, I really appreciate your feedback, your reviews, and your likes and shares. If you send it on to a friend who might find it helpful, it means the world. Make sure that you are subscribed wherever you get your podcast so that you don't miss the next episode. And be sure to follow me on Instagram over at Owning It Podcast, where I share clips, tips, lots of information. And I promise to get better over there and share a little bit more often. Thank you so much and take care of yourself.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.